I'm Maureen McKinney. I cover issues of equity and diversity for Illinois Issues Magazine and WUIS. Recently, the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University published a study looking at corrupt women in Illinois politics. It involved 29 cases over 25 years. I talked to the author, doctoral student Ryan Sarasola, about his findings. Why did you look at this question?
Well, this is something that's been interesting me for a while. I'm originally from Washington State, a state not necessarily known for its political corruption. Then I moved out here to Illinois to attend graduate school here at Southern Illinois University in the sociology department. And being in a state that political corruption seems to be so much of its history makes me wonder what are some sort of things that we can do to perhaps fix the culture of corruption in Illinois specifically, but in parts of America in general. One thing that emerged in the literature was this idea that having more women in positions of political power might be a way to tamp down corruption. And the jury's still out on whether or not that's super effective. But what I wanted to do in this piece was to look at the ways that women might be corrupt in ways that may differ from men or that may be unique to themselves.
What were your major findings?
So I came up with a list of 29 women who were convicted of political corruption in some way or another, or public corruption, rather. My first major finding was that something that's a little commonsensical is the idea that absolute power could corrupt absolutely. Women who had little oversight or who were not supervised by any major governing body, they often committed corrupt acts, or at least 7 out of 29 here engage in some sort of corruption. Rita Crunwell, the comptroller of Dixon, Illinois, is a perfect recent example of someone who had unfettered access to the kitty and, you know, pulled from it. Another theme that I found was that over half, of the women in my sample were not necessarily the power players in the schemes that brought them down. They were either minor players in larger schemes, to be more specific. And this could be something like the ghost payrolling in Chicago or something like that. Their names were brought up, and they were convicted of smaller offenses, but they weren't necessarily the ringleaders. Now, a couple things that I found that were a little more specific, I think, to this population, and just to reiterate, it would be inappropriate to say that I can directly compare men and women in this paper, since I'm looking only at women, but two themes that I found that were different than what I might expect from the literature that I'd read was that almost a third of the women in this sample engaged in corruption in some way with family members. Either their husbands brought them into a case where they ended up being convicted of corruption, or they were willing participants with, you know, a father giving them a ghost job or something like that. And the other theme that I found, which kind of speaks to sort of the structural realities of being a woman in politics, is that in opposition to this idea of men using corruption to further their own political career, taking campaign contributions and using them illegally to foster their own political path, 26 out of the 29 women that I looked at actually used corruption for private gain primarily. That means that they didn't use corruption to, they didn't illegally use campaign funds or something to fund further political career. What they instead did was used it for their own welfare and their own benefit in their private life.
You mentioned Rita Crunwell. Did her case stand out as especially heinous to you?
I mean, when we're talking somebody who embezzled over $50 million over the course of 20 years, it's definitely one that that leaves a taste in your mouth. But what we can definitely see there are some structural factors that might affect women differently than they do men. In the newspaper reports that I analyzed, they talked a lot about how Rita Crunwell was trusted. She had a lot of trust in the community, so it didn't seem like she should be monitored in any specific way. Since then, of course, Dixon has gone through a lot of different changes in the way that they allow their comptrollers to access funds. But newspaper reports referred to her as, you know, a local girl or as somebody who could be trusted. And that goes with gendered ideas of women as more trustworthy than men, as less dishonest than corrupt political men.
Did you expect to see this level of corrupt acts by women?
The two findings that I did, especially about them being immersed in corruption, that, you know, a third of my sample here immersed in corruption that was with their family members. That was something that didn't seem to be spoken to in the literature before this. And I think that that was really interesting. Oftentimes, husbands got their wives into trouble in some way, either by giving them a ghost payroll job or having them lie on taxes or things like that. So that was definitely something. The fact that family still plays a part in the in the lives of these women in politics.
Now, I know you said you didn't directly compare men against women.
Mm-hmm.
But did you see differences that struck you?
Yeah. I mean, you know, in this research, I just look at women, right? But a lot of the literature on corruption has looked at men. So we can sort of do a little bit of comparison between what their major themes are versus the themes that I found. And definitely what I have already mentioned, the idea that women engage in corrupt acts sometimes with their family members, that seemed to be something striking that was different than the way that men do, you know? The other thing that I found was the fact that women, for the great majority in my sample, use their ill-gotten gains for private benefit rather than advancing their own political career. And I think that might actually speak to the structure of politics. There's still, even though Illinois is, you know, a state where there are more women in government than many other states in the union, there's still less opportunity for women to succeed in positions of power. So perhaps the idea is, hey, if I'm going to, you know, steal money from the kitty in this way, I'll just use it for my private life since there doesn't seem to be much success in the future.
What would you say was the major takeaway from your findings?
It doesn't seem like women are the cure-all that we're looking for. You know, there are other ways that they can engage in corrupt acts, perhaps, than men, but the system itself still is orchestrated in a way that lets things like this happen, whether it's because there is a weak oversight in play or whether it's because there are systemic issues where people can easily access networks where corruption can occur, where they can engage in illicit acts. Women aren't the cure-all that some researchers might think they are, is definitely a major takeaway from this. But, you know, we got to point to the silver linings. And in my research, it seemed like after a particularly heinous case like Crundwell, like we were talking about, there are, you know, forces in play afterwards that try to make it so that it doesn't happen again. Now, what we need to do is try to prepare for it in the future rather than every time that a new case comes around. But at least that's something. When we find people who've committed corrupt acts, we can see where there are holes in the system and then try to fix those.